All right, welcome to this episode of O365A. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the latest and greatest on the Microsoft Teams development platform. And we're joined by Microsoft MVP and Teams Developer Platform Champion, Tom Morgan. Welcome, Tom.
Hello, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great. Well, as a former developer, I'm really interested to talk to you and dive into some topics on the Teams development platform. Before I get started, Tom, do you want to just take a minute and introduce yourself, what you do and what you've been up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Tom Morgan. I work out of the UK. I've been in this world for just over 10 years. So I started when it was just off OCS into Link and Skype. And I've always been on the development side. I've been a developer all that kind of time, building solutions on those platforms, and then as they evolved into Teams and then the Teams development platform. And you know, in the last few years that's spread out quite a lot to encompass obviously things like Graph, but wider Microsoft 365. It's pulled in bots, cognitive services, all of that stuff, and now it's looking forward into a lot of the AI stuff obviously, but also Azure and what Azure Communication Services are doing, but it's all kind of remaining kind of pivoting around Teams and communications.
Awesome. I know you've been involved in Teams as a development platform for many years now. It's been really interesting to me when Teams was first released, that was a stated goal right from the start, right? Was to not just be a communication client, collaborative client, but to be this platform that's extensible. You can have different apps, bots, different message extensions, integrate with other systems. If we look now back to like 3 or 4 years ago, we're now at like, 285 million active monthly users for Microsoft Teams. You've had a first row seat on the development platform side of the fence. What have you seen in terms of just how it's evolved, and more importantly, how organizations have adopted some of these new development platform capabilities to work in their organizations?
Yeah, like you're absolutely right. It's always had that the Microsoft solution for telecoms, you know, has always had that kind of software as the differentiator. Always, that was a kind of stated goal all the way back, and it's stayed all that way. And it's given them, I think it's given the platform in whatever guise that is, whether it's Skype, Link, now Teams, it's given it a real advantage for, you know, developers and partners to jump in and kind of wire up those gaps. Because look, the reality is, you know, when Microsoft come out with something like Teams, yes, it is your OS for work. It's where all your stuff comes. But in order for that to happen, like it doesn't overnight get rid of all of the legacy applications that your organization has, right? So you need a way of bringing that data in if you're going to achieve those stated, and if Microsoft want to achieve those stated goals of keeping everyone in Teams and making Teams that OS for work, they have to have these integrations. They have to have these developers come and make these, you know, messaging extensions or bots, or pull in data into applications and allow information to flow into Teams and present it in Teams in order for that sort of to work. So that's really been the focus, I think, for the Teams team in terms of development extensibility, has been making it so that people can bring their data and their kind of processes and how their business runs, bringing that into Teams so that Teams is the kind of hub. And that's always been, I think, even back in the old Link days, and it was always around the context switching of picking up the phone and being in the computer. You know, you'd be at a computer working and the phone would ring and you'd have to turn away and you'd lose that context switch. And they were always trying to bring that together. Now it's about context switching between applications. And so that's where the kind of development platform can really play in. And that's like where you see a lot of organizations making real kind of gains, if you like, is where they really embrace that process of like, let's look at our business end to end, figure out where the pain points are, and you know, whether that's a low code solution, whether it's a, you know, an application that, you know, a developer goes and builds, it's figuring out those pain points and figuring out, would that work out better in Teams? Could the process be slicker? Could it be, you know, less moving parts, less waiting for people to answer emails or whatever else the flow is there? Can you make that smarter? Bringing that into Teams and doing it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned something that tweaked my interest, low-code solutions. Now that the Teams app ecosystem is quite rich, a lot of apps available. Are you seeing organizations benefit more from internally developed applications from a productivity standpoint using the low-code approach? Or is it more leveraging the apps in the store, or a bit of both?
Yeah, it really depends on the organization. There's like a big spectrum from like, Microsoft, you're going to let my users go and create their apps and deploy them. Are you crazy? I don't want that. I don't want to look after that. Like all the way down to, yeah, like let's handhold you. Let's set up a center of excellence. Let's, you know, our team is your team. Like you can hit us up with any questions. And most organizations are somewhere in the middle of that. But it very much depends on the kind of the culture and also the people. Like it depends, have you got those people in your organization that have both enough knowledge of the business and how the business works? Like we all know those people in companies that know way better than the C-suite how the company actually works, and it turns out that all the real work is done by, like, you know, two people in accounts, and like they know the whole process and they have all the answers. Are they willing enough and minded enough to kind of look into this stuff, because it involves them taking on extra work and learning this stuff? Or can you sit them down with a developer or somebody who does want to get into this world but doesn't understand the process yet? Can you join them up? And that's where the center of excellence stuff comes in. It's like showcasing best practice, giving people ideas and making those light bulbs go off. So they'll be like, oh, actually, and it's curing the fear as well, because, you know, it's, again, lots of parallels to the AI stuff that's rolling out right now. The initial thought is like, this is coming for my jobs. And it's like, yeah, probably not, because it's not that good. Don't worry about it. It's more like there's some annoying things we can make go away.
Well, that makes sense. And speaking of apps, I think, Michael, you had a couple questions about that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, people can come in and see some of your work with the work that you've done with Empowering Cloud, the kind of the community and that Teams app bot. Maybe can you talk about, you know, building that out and maybe some of the nuances or planning that you had?
Yeah, that has been a really fun challenge, and I'm really pleased to be a part of that, and it continues to be a very kind of exciting journey there with that, the Empowering Cloud story. And from right early on, you know, very first beginnings, Tom Arbuthnot was super clear he wanted a Teams bot, because a really big part of what makes Empowering Cloud is that, you know, you are engaged and motivated to do the learning. And so, by signing up to this thing, like, yeah, you're on a learning path of different videos and you can drop in and out and search for the stuff you want. But if you want to go through, like, I want to know all about this thing, so I'm going to go down this learning path, watch these videos in order, then something like a bot can be really useful for engagement and kind of making sure that it keeps you back on track. I mean, like, well, you watched this video, now you should watch this video. Did you know this has happened? You watched this video, so you're probably interested in this thing. There's a new video just dropped, or it's been updated. That's another kind of key thing. It's like, what you watched 3 months ago is probably out of date, but you watched it, so we know you're interested in it, so here's the update. And email is great, but it's all about Microsoft Teams. Empowering Cloud is all about Microsoft Teams. A bot makes a lot of sense. And so that's why it was like there right from the very beginning, in a way that's kind of slightly unusual, I suppose, for similar platforms. Like, they, you know, a Microsoft Teams bot probably isn't the first go-to for like engagement. But for us, actually, it worked really well with the kind of the user base. And it has been slightly challenging, but that's mostly our own my problems in kind of just figuring out how to synchronize up the world of AD teams with the fact that actually that's not how you sign into Empowering Cloud. Because we, like, in an enterprise environment, you can't expect necessarily that you're going to be able to sign in with your AD. So we kind of wanted to have different ways for people to sign in. One of those just being a straightforward username and password, the other being LinkedIn. But marrying up those worlds with the authentication world of Microsoft Teams, which is all AD, presents a couple of like sync up challenges. And that was the biggest challenge, actually, is just syncing that stuff up so that, like, when we want to reach you, we know where to go in Teams. So, yeah.
I'm actually surprised you're not using like OpenAI to like read all the video content and then you can ask a question.
So about a millionth time, Tom sent me a message this morning asking why we haven't done that yet. And I'm like, I'll get there. Like 100%, like, it makes a lot of sense, right? It's gonna, yeah, I mean, it would make a better search experience. Would it transformatively change the way people use the site? Probably not, if I'm honest. Like, I don't know. Like, but it'll be really interesting to find out, because we're actually in a quite a sweet spot of having pretty high quality data and good transcription of all that data in quite a small domain space. So actually, it could work really well for kind of answering questions. But yeah, absolutely. I'd be shocked if it didn't come quite soon. So yeah.
I think that's a good segue into, you know, as a developer on the kind of Microsoft stack, and especially in the cloud, things are always changing. And I did hear on a call with you kind of mentioning that some changes on the graph kind of 1.0 endpoint around call records. Maybe you can kind of talk about that, and maybe even just from a developer, you know, following releases and always having to kind of pivot code.
Yeah, this caught my eye because in a previous life, I spent quite a long time with the call records API and working on a solution that ingested it and analyzed it and stuff. So I thought this was kind of interesting. The top level is, so you've got the call records API, which is like a subscription model. So you sign up to get it basically, and then it will call your code on the wrap up of every call. So the call we're on right now, when that call wraps up, it will ping like the API endpoint you set up to ping to say, this call just wrapped up. It was this long. It had this many people in it. And here are all the quality stats about it. Like, here's all the IP addresses. Here's the network, the devices. Here's any weird stuff that happened. So it's great for like analyzing bad calls. It's good for like analysis overall of like who's calling who, like how many calls happen a day, all that sort of stuff. What's interesting about it, the thing that just changed is, where you kind of have people from one company joining calls hosted by another company, because that's a kind of over the federation boundary. And the change is that when you do that now, you as the person receiving the endpoints. So let's say you're an organization, you've signed up to get all these call records APIs for all your users in your organization. When they go and join calls in other tenants, you are only going to get update information about the users in your organization. So you're not going to get a full wrap up of what's going on in that meeting. You won't know how many participants, you won't know relative quality scores or anything. You're only going to find out about your people, which kind of makes sense when you say it out loud. Like, that's a good way of doing it, but it isn't how it used to be. Like, it used to be you'd get everything. And then for a while you had quite a lot of it anonymized. This has all come out of, you know, as this stuff has rolled out worldwide, different countries have like thrown their hands up and be like, you can't do that. That's, you know, it's the EU stuff. It's, you know, all those kind of privacy regulations. What Microsoft has done is made a change across the board. So this impacts everybody, not just, you know, those, not just calls across regional boundaries, not just calls in particular parts of the world. This is for everybody. It impacts everybody. What's interesting about it is that if you're a developer, you wouldn't know this because it's no change to the code. Your code isn't going to break as such. Like, the scheme hasn't changed. The logic hasn't, well, the logic has changed, but like the scheme hasn't changed. It's just the data is less, and sometimes the data is not going to be there when you expect it to be there. So the meaning of the data has changed. And so if you've already got stuff you've written that is like pulling stuff out and putting it in a database somewhere and analyzing it and making decisions on it, you probably want to revisit some of that and make sure that where you've got people joining different meetings, you're not like getting zeros where you're expecting a quality score and it's throwing everything out, or something like, or you're getting like twos and threes instead of 20s and 30s because you're only being told about you. That stuff has sort of gone into effect over the last month or so, which is kind of interesting because, like, I suppose it's not a breaking change in the classic API sense of the word, in that the endpoints have not changed, but the meaning of the data, if you like, has changed somewhat. So yeah. So which you would miss unless you were following this relatively short blog post on the Microsoft 365 DevLogs platform blog, which is something like, which brings back to like, you're never really done with the cloud, with Graph. Like, you're not one and done. Like, this stuff lives in the cloud and it's evergreen and it evolves all the time, and you kind of have to be on it all the time, because stuff changes. That's one of the reasons Empowering Cloud exists, actually, is to kind of try and keep people updated with that stuff. It's why, you know, I do weekly updates, because stuff changes so often. I can sit down and talk for 10 minutes every week around this has changed, this has changed, this has changed. And you just have to be on it all the time. Otherwise stuff changes around you and just stuff breaks. Which is good for job security, I guess, but can be stressful.
Yeah, I had a colleague reference creating code now for kind of the cloud as a garden, right? You have to keep watering it and maintaining it. Otherwise, it's going to just die, right? Like there's it's not like building anymore, right? You just put up a building and it kind of stand on its own. It really has to be maintained going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good analogy. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Tom, I wanted to ask about, there's a product out there called Stream Deck and made by Elgato. And if you're into podcasting or any of that stuff alike, you know, for our listeners' benefit, it's a device you can buy. It has buttons on it. You can control your lights. You can tie into different recording things. And it was exciting when they announced that they would integrate with Teams. And initially that rolled out and then it was pulled back because of an issue. I think you were part of flushing out a rather nasty issue or bug with it. But that ties into this client-side API, and I believe it was the first product to leverage this client-side API. So maybe just talk a little bit about that and what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, it was kind of really interesting because I was as surprised as everyone when this dropped, because my initial thought was like, oh, there's a Stream Deck API, that's cool, and there's a plugin and it works, and it's like tick, 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 because like that must mean there's something in the Teams client that can accept signals from your computer, not just living in the cloud like a lot of these APIs are, an actual local desktop, you know, a client-side SDK that is able to take these signals, even if they're just fairly kind of straightforward, that just button presses, right? It's just some kind of signaling. But that's really interesting. And, you know, I wonder what else it can do and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, as you say, look, the thing got announced and then pulled back for a bit because there was a bug, and now it's back again. So you can go and get it. So if you bought a Stream Deck, like lots of people did, it should now work. So that's good. But yeah, in that process, it turns out that yes, there is going to be a client API that we can all use. But this is kind of not quite it yet. This is the V1 or 0.1 probably, that is really just optimized for use with the Stream Deck. And it's fully functional, but it's like an early prototype. You know, it probably shouldn't be used outside of the parameters of the Stream Deck, not because like they don't want you to particularly, but just that it's probably going to break. Like as they come back to it and be like, oh, we should add these extra things, it turns out that like that schema wasn't very good, so they're going to replace it. And they're not going to like document all of that stuff. They're just going to get it right and update it over time. So I don't think it's a good idea to build anything on it right now, because I think it's going to break. I would wait for them to come out and say, like, we've got one. I think it's really interesting that they're doing it at all, because it's always been something that they haven't wanted to do particularly, or they've always shied away from a little bit, for kind of good reasons, because they've always wanted to have that kind of parity, if you like, between all the clients. You know, all the clients are the same. And if we start putting like a Windows client SDK in over here, then they're not all the same anymore. And so I do get that. But at the same time, I think there's just so many types of applications where this could be really useful. And just because, and I think if they implement it correctly, there's no need for it to be just tied to Windows. It could be like you could build out on the Mac as well. There's no reason why not if you build it that way. So I think they're kind of revisiting that and seeing what they do with it. But I think it will be interesting. There's loads of really interesting things you could do just outside of what the Stream Deck can do already. You know, changing devices, for instance, updating presence, like there's a million really interesting things you could do, answering and rejecting calls. I think there's lots of interesting places you could go. You could imagine, like, if you use any of the contact center apps, they'd love to put some of their like some hotkeys in and stuff like that. So there's definite application there. So I think it's a kind of watch this space sort of thing. But it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you brought back memories of an old product on the Link days called Cookie Mock or Operator Connect, and Cisco integrated with Office Communicator at the time, but they kind of did so in a way that was not really intended, you know, or hopeful by Microsoft, but in terms of taking over the call control and things like that. So, but I guess when you develop an API like that and you put it out there, then people are going to find a way to use it, you know.
Yeah. The other thing is there's been interesting developments over on the Azure communication side as well. Like if your goal is to make something like a cut down Teams client that you want to throw inside of another application, that's some stuff that you can do now on the Azure side that really you can't do on the team side. So that's kind of really interesting. And it's really interesting as a kind of outside of Microsoft person to see the evolution of how ACS and Teams are kind of going slightly different routes to kind of solve the same problems. Because it's really good for developers, because when we can just opt into whichever one like works the best for the solution we're trying to solve. So that's kind of really interesting.
Just before I pass it off to Hab, I was going to ask you about, you published a book, I guess around about last year, called Yes. Building and Developing Apps and Bots for Microsoft Teams, a guide for developers and normal people alike. So I'm just more curious what was the motivation behind that? And you know, it is a digital book, so you're constantly updating it.
Yeah, really, the landscape seemed quite broad and a bit confusing if you're coming into it the first time. And so I had so many conversations with people like, I kind of want to do something with Teams. And here's the thing in my head. But like, I've done a quick search and there's 10 different APIs, there's 3 different SDKs, like there's Graph, and I don't really know where to start. And that's really what I wanted to sort of address was, okay, here's a 101 on what all the different things are and their sort of strengths and weaknesses and where you might use them and what they're good for, so that, you know, now you won't come out of reading the book knowing everything about all of them, but hopefully you'll know like just enough to figure out, okay, the thing I need to go and like figure out, find a learn course on is this thing, you know, or whatever else it is. To be fair to Microsoft, actually, over the course of like the last year, they've done a good job of updating the Microsoft Teams developer landing page as well now, which is it's got much clearer sections on like what can you do, what does what, and I want to build this, where do I go, that sort of thing, which hopefully complements like the stuff in the book. But yeah, that was kind of the goal around it, is like, here's all the things you could do and here's roughly the ways in which you do them.
Nice.
And then, so lastly, Tom, I think I want to ask you what you think about, from an IT pro perspective, you know, what the future is for like Graph API versus PowerShell modules, like, you know, Azure AD and Teams.
Yeah, I think, I think there's a place for all of them at the moment. I think that's still the case. Like Graph definitely, like Graph has really evolved into a big thing now, you know, like it's its own thing. Like it's no longer just a kind of collection of all of the different APIs of the products. It's they've taken on really like almost a governance role as well around maintaining a level of quality, maintaining a level of good documentation, a common permission structure. Like all those things have really, really helped like developers stuff done quickly now. You know, if I'm doing some application and I suddenly want to do some stuff with Word or, you know, SharePoint or something, which it's, you know, I wouldn't normally do, it isn't going to take me forever to figure it out now. It's like, oh, it's in the Graph, I know how to do this, it's just I just need to figure out what the endpoint is. So I think that stuff is all staying. There's some interesting stuff happening around how they produce this stuff on the inside, I can't remember the name. It begins with a K, it's like Kotlin or something. But the idea is that they're looking at the code they're writing, and then from that inferring the API endpoint stuff. Like they've got their APIs and like on the inside, and then from that they're automatically creating the SDKs, they're automatically creating the PowerShell. That is going to be brilliant in a few versions of time, probably. Like it's good, and I'm really pleased they're doing it. There are still some rough edges, just because like it is doing exactly what they've asked it to do, and it is exposing some of the rough edges that like normally if you were going to write an SDK around it, you'd be like, oh, well, that's not very good. We'll sand that bit down and we won't show people that bit, you know. Whereas this is just like running through and be like, well, the API on the inside looks like this, so here you go. And so I think where like we're seeing some kind of rough edges with the PowerShell as well. I think that's probably what that is, and it will settle down, I think. But I mean, I think I go in sort of stages really, because sometimes I think, well, actually maybe PowerShell should just be should front end Graph, and they should just be the Graph endpoints, and you have PowerShell to front end it. But every time I think that, then it's like, well, actually the use cases are different for what you want to do. Graph makes sense to have like almost like a RESTful API where every every call is separate from every other call. And like as a developer, that's a, you know, you can separate them out or you can join them together. It's up to you. The whole idea around PowerShell is about chaining commands together to produce something like quickly and efficiently and, you know, glue that stuff together. And so like, if you're gonna do it, I think there is still a place for PowerShell if it's done right. Yeah, it's a bit of a waffly answer, sorry.
Yeah, I think on the IT pro side, it's a big shift, right? Because if you look at the traditional PowerShell modules, it was really like built friendly, right? Hey, you're IT pro, you want to, you know, apply a license to a user, you can kind of structure that, you can pull your users and kind of do that. With the Graph SDK PowerShell module, it's like that very thin layer to make PowerShell talk to Graph. So things like Graph errors, like throttling or connection issues or wrong commands, you get the API error versus like a PowerShell, like, hey, you can't do this because of X. Yeah. So
and that's exactly it. It's like you're calling the Graph API, and that's really obvious. Whereas, yeah, for when it was PowerShell, they spent the time, I guess, to think about what do people want to use this tool for. Let's make a set of commands that map to what those people want to use it for. Yeah, for sure. You reminded me, there's a really good tool for, I don't think this will work for PowerShell, but for Graph, there's a really good developer tool called the Graph Proxy, which if you're not using, you should use. But it's basically like a proxy server for using Graph. And so you can hook it up in your development workflow. So you call that rather than calling Graph, and it will still call Graph, but it will just add in sort of random rate limiting, throttling, weird 500 errors, all the stuff that Graph does. So that you can make sure your code is good at doing things like back off and respecting like the retry limits and respecting throttling limits and stuff like that. And you can dial them up and down. There's a million configurable packages you can put in. They're really iterating that stuff quickly. Like the most recent changes include some stuff about like reminding you to do paging properly if it looks like you're not doing paging properly, and all these kind of cool things. So that's a really nice tool to put into your kind of developer tool chain to make sure that when you get the throttling problems that you're going to get in Graph, you get them on your dev machine and not in live, which is where most people get them. Like everything works fine in your tenant and everything works fine in the test tenant because there's three people in the test tenant. And then it's like, that's customer number one. When they like roll it out to the first region, that's when you find like the rate limiting stuff. And you're like, oh dear. And yeah. So I know that because I was there. I've done it several times. So like this is a really useful tool. So
I mean, many of us have lived with the throttling pains and cryptic error codes, so definitely worth mentioning.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up there. I could go on about PowerShell questions and some OpenAI stuff, but I think those are separate dedicated episodes. So Tom, really want to thank you for your insights. It was great to get your views right from hands-on in the field. Really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.